Marsha Broussard, who is local in New Orleans. Dr. Broussard is a public health leader who serves as the program director and principal investigator for the School Health Connection Program and the Orleans Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program at LPHI, which is Louisiana Public Health Institute. LPHI is an independent, nonprofit public health organization that strives to improve the health and quality of life throughout the state. Under Marsha's leadership, LPHI has become a key stakeholder in school health services, including school-based health centers, health and wellness programs, and at-risk reduction programs that target adolescents. Success has required coalition building across the state and local governmental agencies, universities, foundations, and local community-based partners.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I guess I can start by saying that I also like to thank my colleagues because I've learned so much from your presentations. I always feel as though we've done a lot in school health, but there's so much more that we could do. So the GROW program, and I have no relationships to disclose. The GROW program is funded by the Blue Cross Blue Shield of Louisiana, and actually, I guess maybe 3 or 4 years ago, they introduced something called the Challenge Grants, and it is all about communities living healthier, eating more fruits and vegetables. And so statewide, there are probably 10 or so grantees, and there are several grantees in New Orleans, the New Orleans Kids Partnership being one of them. And then Louisiana Public Health Institute also has a Challenge Grant. So I want to acknowledge my colleague here, Kyle Huckey, who is responsible for a lot of the data analysis for the project and basically just helps me in a lot of different ways. So the goal of the GROW program is to promote increased consumption of fruit and vegetables and increased physical activity among youth. And it's a place-based initiative, so it's actually focusing on the three zip codes in the Gentilly community. And Gentilly is pretty large and has other communities, but we're focusing on three zip codes. We base the initiative on the ecological model of health behavior change, so we sort of have a framework for approaching this. As you all know about the model, there are like various, basically what the model says is that behavioral change is influenced by all different sorts of levels. It's not just individual knowledge and attitudes, but it's also the your family, i.e. interpersonal reactions, the organization that you either go to school in or you work in, the community that you live in, and certainly community, state, and national level policies. So at the individual level, our main intervention for GROW is that we have Saturday activities. And in New Orleans, we have a number of facilities around the city. We call them the New Orleans Recreation Department facilities. And since Katrina, we really have not had high levels of programming in those facilities. So right now, our Saturday GROW has migrated to the St. Bernard and Gentilly Community Center. And there on Saturdays from 9 until around 3 in the afternoon, kids and families can come for fitness classes. We serve healthy lunches. We do cooking classes and lots of different types of physical activity. And a part of that is just changing individual attitudes, knowledge, and behaviors around eating fruits and vegetables and just being active. And on the interpersonal side, and we really don't have much data, we haven't done much data analysis on this level yet, but the whole idea was to increase social support among youth through social media, i.e. having them log on to a website with their own password to exchange information about physical activities they were doing and great things they were eating through Instagram and Facebook and other social media. So we're still looking at that and really just beginning to collect information to evaluate that part of the program. At the organizational level, GROW partnered with School Health Connection, which is a part of Louisiana Public Health Institute, and in our five schools in those three zip codes, we're doing coordinated school health. So with that, we are trying to change school health policies, hoping to get schools to make a commitment towards more physical activity for the students, and also to make changes around competitive foods, i.e. taking the snacks out of the vending machines, and just doing other policy and programmatic changes to promote health and wellness and a culture of a healthy, and promote the culture of a healthy school. At the community level, we really have been working on infrastructure projects, park cleanups, getting kids who are part of Saturday Grow as well as parents to volunteer for other infrastructure sorts of things. We mapped out some bike trails for kids to actually get from school to the Grow sites. That's the community intervention. And then on the policy change level, we actually have a citywide advisory committee, and they have been working on policy changes to allow communities to have resources for more health and wellness activities. And in particular, we're working on a social impact bond measure in hopes that we can raise the resources in order to have a sustained community coordinator for the GROW program and for other programs like that, for NORD in particular, to have the resources for ongoing programming. So that's what the initiative looks like. So again, this was just sort of to demonstrate how we did some analysis at all of those levels at the very beginning, in order to understand what some of the individual challenges were as it relates to behavioral change, some of the interpersonal, organizational, community, and policy challenges were. And so we probably didn't use this tool to its highest and best use. However, the model does allow you to do the needs assessment aspects of doing your program planning, as well as mapping out what your solutions might be. And certainly, you're going to see where, as it relates to the individual level, which is the data that I'm presenting today, that things like lack of knowledge, that in particular will kind of be, will surface as an area that we're trying to address with our program. So, the goals for youth who participate in GROW are to see self-reported significantly more knowledge and positive attitudes regarding healthy habits, self-reporting more consumption of fruit and vegetables and increased physical activity from the baseline, self-reporting higher levels of social support from family, peers, and teachers regarding eating well and increasing physical activity. And some other goals, one which I think we'll get some information from our baseline survey, and then we'll have to look at some of our other evaluation strategies to look at whether or not the schools that are participating will show or reflect a school culture change to promote a priority toward health and wellness and increasing nutrition and physical activity, and also will the Gentilly community associations who we've tried to reach out to participate in this initiative, will they become stronger advocates for community infrastructure improvements that support increased physical activity and also access to fresher foods? Because those three zip codes are all what we would consider to be food deserts. Notes here that I want to share as we go. So this is a little bit about our methods as it relates to the GROW questionnaire and the response rates. So it was developed by myself and other staff such as Kyle. We also, the co-program developers for this is the Pennington Biomedical Research Center out of Baton Rouge. They're a part of LSU. And they've done rather extensive work around obesity and obesity reduction in the state. So they formulated some of the questions that they were interested in knowing about. We did our baseline data collection between May 2013 and August 2014, and we're doing a one-year follow-up. We were able to have passive consent, even though we are tracking the kids over a year, which is somewhat unusual. Typically, you have to do active consent when you're tracking kids, but Pennington's IRB did allow us to do passive consent, which has helped a lot, although we still are having our challenges with respect to the tracking aspect of this, as you could all imagine. We collected data at five locations. The first three schools are K through 8, and you can see our baseline survey numbers. The high school, this is mostly ninth graders, but we only got 39 respondents from the high school. And then during Saturday Grow, we had a total of 290 respondents. So we've had pretty good consistent participation among youth for Saturday Grow, which is pretty good. It really indicates not only a need, but a high response from kids and families where kids want to be active and do not necessarily have some of the options that you might think. So just a little bit about our survey sample. We had 776 respondents. The mean age is 11, or about 12 years of age. About the balance between males and females. And, of course, in our public schools in Orleans, 90% of the kids are African American, and so our sample kind of looks like what's typical of the city. Most kids come from small families where the mean number of kids is around 3. And surprisingly, because we've had lots of transportation issues, and there are lots of transportation issues around the city in general, but over half of the kids come from a family with two or more working cars. So that was interesting for us. I thought it might be different. So I guess the issue here is the biggest finding in terms of kids knowing about their parents and so forth is that kids tend not to know how much education their parents have. If you notice that, as far as them knowing the level of education for their moms and their dads, it was really almost around 50% or 40% didn't know. And I thought that was kind of interesting. I guess parents don't think to really tell their kids about these things. So in terms of nutrition knowledge, I'm going to try to add in my head, but nutrition knowledge for fruit consumption was better than for vegetable consumption. About 30% of the kids knew that they should eat at least 4 or more servings of fruit a day, but only about 24% of the kids knew that they should eat 4 or more servings of vegetables daily. In terms of nutrition attitudes, about 72% of kids thought that eating fruit is very important, and only about 50% of kids felt like eating vegetables is very important. So they don't like vegetables, and they don't think it's important to eat them. As far as physical, we also looked at soda consumption, and we found that about 64% of kids are drinking at least 2 or more sodas daily, which was very disturbing, and the sugary sodas, not diet, and that about 51% of kids are dining at McDonald's or Pizza Hut or any fast food restaurant 4 more times a week, and 10% more than 10 times a week. So we have a significant issue in terms of those behaviors. So, as far as eating fruit per day, about 37% that they said that they had 3 or more servings of fruit daily, and about far fewer, 21%, said that they had 3 or more servings of vegetables daily. And again, this is our baseline information. As far as whether or not they thought you should exercise, I thought these results were good. About at least 33%, a third, understood that they should get 60 minutes of exercise daily. And I thought that was, we can work with that. And then 10% said that at least 30 minutes of exercise daily was important in terms of maintaining their health. And then in terms of how important it was to them personally that they should exercise, 56% said it was important to extremely important that they get daily physical activity. So, because of the circumstances of our community being a high crime community, and I hate to say that, but you know that certainly is the national perception that we are high in crime. It was interesting, I think, that people did not, our kids didn't feel unsafe with respect to traffic and things like that. 81% said that traffic crossings did not keep them from participating in physical activity. However, 59% said that they never or sometimes did not feel safe in their neighborhoods. 54% said that that they didn't feel safe enough to walk, never or sometimes. 36% or ride their bike. And then 44% said that they did not or were not allowed by their parents to go outside because it was, if sometimes felt unsafe or never felt safe. And in terms of whether or not they felt they had safe places near home to play, 73% said yes and 27% said no. So that was a little bit of a contradiction, but overall there were a lot of issues around safety. Okay. So we haven't done a great deal of analysis. I shouldn't say that because Kyle would be like, speak for yourself. But, you know, there's probably a lot more that we could do with the baseline data, but now we're beginning to collect the one-year follow-ups. But we did see, I guess, the most interesting correlations around the critical importance of social support for physical activity as well as for eating, for eating. And that, of course, the literature supports the idea that social support is really important, but I found it that this is an asset that's available within our kids and within our families, and it's something that we can really take advantage of in reference to promoting positive behaviors. So, so far, you know, what are the implications for our baseline data as it relates to our program going forward? Well, we know that kids like fruit more than vegetables, and so we know that there's a gap as it relates to their knowledge about nutrition and nutrition guidelines, particularly as it relates to vegetable consumption, and that's something we need to work on. I got some interesting ideas in reference to how we can make school foods more attractive in some real simple ways. We know that there's a desire for physical activity among our kids, and we also saw that there's a positive association between social support and self-efficacy for physical activity and nutritious behaviors. So I didn't talk much about self-efficacy, but clearly I think that the more comfortable kids feel doing a certain types of activities, if they feel like they know how to play basketball or how to play tennis, those sorts of things, they're more likely to do it, which is support for the approach that we're taking in terms of the individual intervention. And also, the female gender was negatively associated with social support for physical activity compared to boys, where it was positively associated. So girls need more support to be physically active and to eat properly. And so here's our team. Again, Danielle Burrell, who is the more or less the person that's on the ground getting the job done. I help with, you know, the design and the evaluation, as does Kyle. And then NOKP's executive director, who's Matt Schwarzman. So.
Okay, that worked out well. We've got 10 minutes for questions, and then we'll wrap it up so people can catch planes. And after that, maybe, I know one of you has to catch a plane, we can do some personal stuff. So who wants first question?
survey, it's statistically stable at the census tract level. It is market potential is the name of the product. It's in community analyst, or it's in, it's not in the tapestry set, but I think it's in the community analyst set is where you can get it.
Do they go out and do a survey?
No, Esri doesn't do it. They get the data from marketing firms, from surveys that are done locally. From every time you use your affinity card at the grocery store, it tracks your purchase, which is then tied to your address, which is then converted into your census tract.
I had a question for Mary Ann.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, so as it relates to the competitive foods and the rules that govern that, can you address that?
Sure. Yeah. For those of you unfamiliar with school meals, so first came the new low-calorie guidelines, and then came the smart snacks in school, and now they have sodium. So it's still, schools are still trying to encourage kids to take the fruit or the vegetable instead of the smart snack. So it's still the same principles of giving fruit and vegetables to prime location, bundle those with meals, and then the snack is the snack foods, even though they are 100 calories or less, or whole grain, or they meet the requirements, still trying to get them out of the main path and out of eye level.
So they can purchase this, or can they purchase all other kinds of foods
they can
as well?
Yeah, they can
like
purchase.
Sodas?
No. Sodas are out. The smart snacks are really specific. They came into effect last year, and they are, it reads like a federal requirement that, you know, they have to be under 100 calories. The first item has to be a whole grain, a fruit, or a vegetable. But there still are snacks in school.
I'm sorry, but are they sold in the vending machine, or is this part of the cafeteria, or do you have no vending machines?
Schools can have vending, but they can't be operating during meals. They are usually like after school or something like that. They're called, they're called competitive foods because the idea is that they compete with the meal. Mm-hmm. So most of what we're talking about is a reimbursable meal, and kids can choose up to 5 items. And at the middle and high school, they're not taking the 5 items. They're taking a fruit or a vegetable. And the idea is that if they're still hungry, then instead of taking the smart snack, to take that other fruit or vegetable mm-hmm. that they're not.
More questions?
For Melissa, you had a low percentage of Hispanic the kids who drank milk, and you explained that at least in part by a preference for whole milk. But could part of that be due to lactose intolerance as well?
It certainly could. That's, I think, a viable alternative explanation.
Thank you.
Yes.
Question for Maria as well. In terms of from an operational perspective, so you said you went to the schools and there was a difficult one-day training. In terms of actually making nothing smarter, how did the schools keep things fresh throughout the whole school year in terms of changing up the marketing, changing up the signage? Can you talk about that?
They really didn't do a lot of marketing. The idea of smarter lunchrooms is that their environment will change. I mean, cafeterias are crazy busy. And the idea is that it's just change where things are, do items.
ring within.
Yeah. And then there were segments, and the segment was a community. And it didn't seem like there was a lot of change that occurred over that 10-year period. Or were there some where there was some gradual change?
What you would see of some of is
orange.
Going from red to lighter orange, maybe a yellow, then back to a lighter orange in several large communities.
And so did you have, were you trying to explain that variation? Or?
One of the things we did was look at how that corresponded to the rates of, or the prevalence of disease that year, also to other market issues. We saw a huge increase in basically junk food consumption in 2008-2009, which is not a surprise. We also saw a big increase in smoking, adult smoking, in 2008-2009.
So what was the
economic downturn?
Just the downturn.
We had a huge unemployment
spike.
Yeah, people went to comfort food, they went to smoke, or cheaper food. They went to smoking behavior, increasing alcohol, increasing suicide. But that's a different study.
Yeah, but that is an incredible
do you track the economy by watching the health outcomes?
Yeah, we monitor economic trends as well as demographic shifts and trends. We do our population projections are actually based on housing stock in our land use planning. You know, like plans go into a different community for development of so many units in a certain target market. You know, so we keep track of all of that as we're tracking our health data as well. We never met a database we didn't like.
Yes. APHA. Thank you to our presenters, and thanks to y'all for sticking it out.